My name is Debony Parker, and I'm a student at Saginaw Valley College. I'm about to have a taped interview with Mr. Terry Pruitt, the Deputy Administrator of the Model Cities Program in Saginaw, Michigan. Mr. Pruitt will explain how Saginaw, Michigan became chosen as one of the 150 model cities in the United States. He will explain the relationship that the federal government has with local government and the relationship that the local government has with the citizens in the community of the Model Cities area. Mr. Pruitt will discuss the various programs contained in the Model Cities project. And finally, we will look at the successes and failures of Model Cities. This interview is taking place in the Model Cities office located in Saginaw, Michigan on Jefferson Street on June 20th, 1972.
And I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Saginaw Model Cities Program. I think before we get into what the Model Cities Program is all about, I'd first of all like to give you some brief background information on myself. I'm a local resident or native of Saginaw. I've been here, born here and raised here, and went through my whole life here in Saginaw. Upon graduating from Saginaw High in 1966, I went to Washington, Michigan University, and I majored in business administration and management, and I graduated in December of '70. Since then, I have been with the Model Cities Program in varying capacities. The first position I had was with the Model Cities Program. I was an evaluator. Assistant Evaluation Analyst, and that job entailed monitoring and reporting on various projects that Model Cities funds. And from that position, I moved into a position of Assistant Director of the Multipurpose Center, which is another one of the projects that we fund, and I was got into the administrative end of Model Cities there initially, and from there I came here, and as I stated before, I'm presently Deputy Director of the Model Cities Program here in Saginaw. So you can see I've been with the program ever since I did graduate from college, and I've been with it over a year and a half now. And from there, I think we can get into Model Cities.
Okay, Terry, would you offer us some explanation on how Saginaw became a model city?
Well, I think I can begin by saying, and let's go back and give a brief history of model cities on a national level rather than just with Saginaw. I think we can eventually get around to Saginaw. The Model Cities Program, which was originally called the Demonstration Cities Act, is a Johnson administration program. It was originated back in the fall of 1966 under Johnson's Great Society program. He placed a lot of emphasis on cities and different areas of humanity. This is one of the programs that did evolve out of the Great Society concept that President Johnson set down. Basically, the Demonstration Cities Act was a comprehensive demonstration program which set up demonstration projects in many cities to show how people themselves could effectively deal with their own problems. Basically, the purpose of model cities is to rebuild or revitalize large slum and blighted areas to expand housing, income opportunity, reduce dependence on welfare agencies, improve educational facilities. But a very comprehensive program supposedly to deal in many problem areas for slum and blighted and ghetto neighborhoods. And at present, there are somewhere around 150 cities which have been designated model cities throughout the country. Saginaw first made application for model cities back in April of 1967, and they were finally selected to become a model city in March of 1968. Model cities is a five-year planning program. You're funded each individual year, but you're supposed to develop a five-year program and work on that five-year program on a year-to-year basis and developing programs and projects. Saginaw currently is being funded for $1,729,000 a year. So we can see easily that over a five-year period, we will have a total model cities grant of somewhere near $10 million. In fact, we will quite possibly have way over $10 million when you throw in the idea that model cities money is the only federal money that can be matched with other federal money, which I'll get into a little bit later. I think the important thing for us to remember, once again, is that Model Cities is a comprehensive demonstration program that is to delve into all of the problem areas, the environmental problems, the economic problems, social problems, the educational problems, all the problems. And I think the very unique thing about Model Cities that we should remember right from the start is that Model Cities differs from any other federal program in that it presents the opportunity to citizens and people in the community to develop solutions or projects or proposals in an attempt to solve their own problems. It puts very much emphasis on the idea of citizens' participation. Let the citizens define and state their own problems, and let citizens themselves come up with solutions for those problems. Traditionally, with federal programs, we've had our senators and congressmen up in Washington sit and develop projects for us and programs for us, and then send back the good word back to the local communities and say, this is the way you have to do it, this is how much money you have to do it, and so on and so on. Well, Model Cities is different. Model Cities places one lump sum of money here, but the federal government says, you tell us what your problems are, and you tell us what you want to do as far as solving those problems. So, I think, like I said before, I think the one thing that we should remember about Model Cities, if we don't remember anything else, is the uniqueness as far as citizens involvement in the program. All model cities have designated boundaries. In other words, as I alluded to in some of my previous comments about cities being designated model cities and touching on the blighted and slum areas of those particular cities, each city in making application to the federal government to become a model city must designate a section of the town or the area to become a model city. And in making application and designating that area, they must show in their application why they want this particular area designated as a model city area. And like I said before, the real reason is that this is the area of town, a section of town that has the most problems and the biggest problems and has the most problems solving those problems. So here in Saginaw, basically the model neighborhood is Northeast Saginaw, and this is no secret. This is where all the minorities, specifically the blacks in town, live. This is the so-called ghetto area of Saginaw. This is the, you know, the slum area of Saginaw. And Northeast Saginaw faces many, many problems. It's bounded south by James, on the north by Washington Avenue, and the eastern boundary is 23rd Street, which is the city limits, and the western boundary is the Saginaw River. So we've got that one little section, well, not necessarily a little section, but we're talking in terms of 20,000 people when we talk about the model neighborhood. And what Model Cities is all about. This is how Saginaw was designated the Model Cities, and this is the area of town that was designated as the Model Cities. I think right now we can get into the various participants in the Model Cities program. Basically, we have four or five major participants in the program. Of course, there's the federal government who puts up the money, and we're all the federal government with tax dollars. And it's the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, or in other words, HUD, is the federal department where the money comes from. City of Saginaw, the City Council, which is the administrative body of the city, is responsible, has the final responsibility for the Model Cities program. HUD signs a contract with the City of Saginaw to carry on the program. And we work on a third-party arrangement with the projects that we fund. We have contracts with the City of Saginaw and the different operating agencies that run the project. I'll get into the projects just a little bit later. So we've got HUD on the federal level, we've got the City Council on the local level. From there we go into the three major components which run the everyday processes of Model Cities. And that's the CDA staff, which I'm a member of, and which carries out the technical end of Model Cities. Somebody has to develop contracts. Somebody has to develop reports for the government. Somebody has to do, handle this $1,729,000 as far as the accounting end of it. And this is what the CDA staff stands for, or represents. And CDA stands for the City Demonstration Agents, which was taken from the Demonstration Cities Act. We handle the everyday technical end of Model Cities. We prepare reports for the council, we prepare court reports for the citizens, we prepare reports for the federal government. We help develop contracts, help write proposals. Like I said, the everyday technical end of Model City is our responsibility. And we report directly to City Hall. Then what we have is the Citizens Participation Staff, which is a division of the CDA. But they pretty well handle their own aspect of the program. The CP staff is the Citizens Participation Staff. Earlier I mentioned the uniqueness of citizens' involvement in the program, so this is where the Citizens Participation Staff comes in. They are responsible for involving citizens in the program. They recruit recruit people to serve on committees. They encourage citizens to approach model cities with ideas and proposals as to how they can go about solving a particular or a specific problem. And that's basically, in a few words, what the CP's responsibility is, Citizen Participation Staff. Then the other major component of the Model Cities program is what we call the Citizens Policy Board. Now, the Policy Board is made up of citizens in the community, just people right off the street. And also, it's made up of some agency, local agency representatives. And this board comprises 36 members. Now, the Policy Board is the sort of the word and mouth for the citizens in the community. The Policy Board approves all projects and proposals. There are various committees of the Policy Board that go into what we call program areas and make recommendations to the Policy Board to fund different projects and also citizens are encouraged to monitor or check into different projects to find out if they're successful. Do they in fact warrant the money that we're giving them? So the Policy Board is the representative of the citizens in the community. This is how the citizens in the community present their views and make their views known to the rest of us. So the Policy Board is a very important part of the Model City program. When we talk about citizens' involvement, this is where they, this is how they participate in the program, through the Policy Board and through the various committees. There's 11 different committees for the Policy Board. And these committees are broken up into program areas, economic development, education, manpower, drugs, health, public safety, physical development, housing. So all these different committees are comprised of just everyday normal citizens in the community who have an interest in these different areas. By the way, when we talk about committees in the Policy Board, these people are paid to participate at these committees and the Policy Board. It's only a very nominal fee, but this is, again, gets back to the uniqueness of Model City as far as citizens' involvement. We have it worked out so that we pay them $5 per meeting for attending. We also can pay babysitting fees in case they want to participate and can't because they have small children and need a babysitter. We even pay lost time when so people who have full-time jobs but still want to participate. If their employer agrees to let them off 4 hours to attend the meeting, and we reimburse them for those 4 hours that they didn't couldn't work. So again, this gets back into the citizens' involvement and the uniqueness of the Model Cities program. So as you can see, Model Cities is quite an involved process. A lot of red tape involved in the Model Cities program. But basically, the Model Cities program can, you know, really do some good things.
Terry, how has the citizen participation, has it been high or low?
I think the basic problem, not to kind of elude an answer to your question, but I think the basic problem we find with citizens' participation is that the federal government really failed to define explicitly what citizen participation is. So all across the country there's quite a bit of confusion as to how much power citizens actually have and what actually is citizens' participation. HUD says that citizens have to be involved in the planning and development processes of model cities, but they also, on the other hand, say that the city council is the final responsibility or authority for model cities, you know. So it gets confusing at times when you find yourself in some very ticklish positions where the citizens might want a particular project or something, and the city council says no, or who should reign, you know, who should have the final say. HUD says the city council does. So it puts you in a ticklish position, although we haven't really ran across that problem too much here in Saginaw, because most of the projects that we've come up with have been in some very severe problem areas, and the citizens and council have gotten together and gone along, and the council hasn't really objected to too many things that the citizens have come up with. The other problem that I see in citizens' participation is this. When you give citizens a chance to define their own problems and come up with solutions for those problems, you find yourself in a ticklish position, because we find that citizens have only those resources or materials to draw from, only those things that they've been exposed to throughout their own everyday lives. And for instance, if the citizens say we have a problem in the area of education, then they say, well, let's go to the Board of Education and give them some money and let's develop a project centered around the Board of Education. Well, the problem is the Board of Education. You know, they're operating the public school systems, and if they're failing the students, you know, then the citizens are saying, okay, let's go to the Board of Education and let them develop the project. You know, well, you're only perpetuating the problem when you give them money and they're already the existing problem. You know, so this is the difficulty in citizens' participation. How do you help citizens to develop projects to solve specific problems when the only thing that they have to draw from are their previous experiences and the things that they've been exposed to? And, you know, those systems and those institutions that already are in existence. And it's very difficult to sit down and develop technical projects and that kind of thing to solve specific problems without some sort of technical training and background. And so this presents a problem, even in the areas of social welfare and that kind of thing. You know, so we developed a food stamp center, which is located in the Mile neighborhood, whereas before they had to go way across the river. Well, still, you know, we've got still got those social problems that created the food stamp center in the first place. You know, so by creating a food stamp center or having a caseworker hand out food stamps in another location still hasn't solved the problem. You know, but the only, you know, answer or project that citizens have come up with is, you know, well, we need more food stamps, you know, which is the problem in the first place. You know, we should be trying to get away from food stamps altogether, you know. So these are the problems. But still, I think in the past, for too long, citizens have been ignored. And although we've got all these public institutions like your boards of education and your city councils and your mayors and your city managers who supposedly represent the community as a whole and should be doing things and listening to the citizens of the community, many times you get hung up in a lot of bureaucracy and politics, and the people do what's good to keep them in office and that kind of thing. So they're not very responsive, and, you know, in many ghetto areas, you will find that local governments aren't very responsive to the people anyway, because people do not vote. Very seldom do you have candidates coming over here on the
working side of town campaigning because simply they know the people ain't coming out to vote no way. You know, you got 25,000 people over here and maybe 300 people will vote. Even in the national election, you know what I'm saying. So, as a result, you get a bunch of duds in City Hall who don't represent any of the needs or problems of the people in this area. And you lost, you know, and until something like Model City's coming along where you got a little bit of power. And, you know, but again, you know, it's difficult for people over here. It's not an easy job for them to come up with solutions to problems. So, at that, I think we can get into what is Model Cities doing in Saginaw? What projects are they funding? What problems are they attempting to solve with Model Cities program? We have some 18 different projects that we're funding out of Model Cities money. Again, we have $1,729,000 of Model Cities money to spend. We're in what we call our second action year. I told you earlier that that Model City is a 5-year program. Okay, we've got, as I stated, 18 different projects that we're funding. And also, I stated before, we've broken our program down into program areas. In the area of education, we're funding 3 different projects. The career development project and the instructional improvement project are both projects with the Saginaw Public School System. And they're pretty well self-explanatory just by their title. Instructional improvement is delving very, very heavily in the area of individual improvement and you know, the different skill areas, reading, math, that kind of thing. And the project employs resource teachers and counselors to work on an individual basis to help students improve in the different skill areas. Career development is orientated toward just that career development, encouraging students to go on to school. And basically what it is teacher aids, and students are employed, high school students and college students are employed in the public school system as teacher aides, and are encouraged to go out to Delta or Saginaw Valley or to some other college and pick up training and become teachers and that kind of thing. The other education project which we're funding is the St. Joe Adult Education Program. Most of the people locally here are aware of the problems that the Catholic schools and the parochial schools ran into in the past couple of years. Funding has been a very difficult problem for them. And the St. Joe project here in Saginaw has been a very, very successful project in dealing with the dropout, those students who just couldn't make it in the public school system. And it's very funny because, you know, you can take St. Joe, a little small neighborhood school facility, and they do magic or wonders with some of these kids and people who couldn't make it in the public school system. The education part of our program takes up approximately 30% of our funds. So at that, that covers our educational area pretty closely.